Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, Text 9 through 12. Let us read Text 9 together, and then I'll do the rest. Yatra vidruma sopana Mahamara katabhuva Yatra spatika kudyani Vaidurya stamba panktaya Yatra vidruma sopana Mahamara katabhuva Yatra spatika kudyani Vaidurya stamba panktaya Yatra vidruma sopana Mahamara katabhuva Yatra spatika kudyani Vaidurya stamba panktaya Vaidurya stamba panktaya Yatra vidruma sopana Mahamara katabhuva Yatra spatika kudyani Vaidurya stamba panktaya Yatra vidruma sopana Vaidurya stamba panktaya. Ladies, please. Thank you. I'll read the next three verses. Yatra chitra vitanani padmaragasanani cha payapena nibhashaya muktadama parichada kujadbir nuparayar devya shabdayantya itastata ratnastali shupashyanti sudati sundaram mukham tasmin mahindra bhavane mahabalo mahamana nirjita loka ekarat Rime bivandyangri yuga saradhidhi prathapitair urjita chanda shasana. Should we read all of the word-for-word translations, please? Skip them. Okay, translation and purport by His Divine Grace. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The steps of King Indra's residence were made of coral. The floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. The walls were of crystal and the columns of Vaidurya stone. The wonderful canopies were beautifully decorated. The seats were bedecked with rubies and the silk bedding, as white as foam, was decorated with pearls. The ladies of the palace, who were blessed with beautiful teeth and the most wonderfully beautiful faces, walked here and there in the palace, their ankle bells tinkling melodiously, and saw their own beautiful reflections in the gems. The demigods, however, being very much oppressed, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu, who chastised the demigods very severely and for no reason. Thus Hiranyakashipu lived in the palace and severely ruled everyone. Purport. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful in the heavenly planets that all the demigods except Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu were forced to engage in his service. Indeed, they were afraid of being severely punished if they disobeyed him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti has compared Hiranyakashipu to Maharaj Vena, who was also atheistic and scornful of the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. Yet Maharaj Vena was afraid of some of the great sages such as Bhrigu, whereas Hiranyakashipu ruled in such a way that everyone feared him but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Hiranyakashipu was so alert against being burnt to ashes by the anger of great sages like Bhrigu that by dint of austerity he surpassed their power and placed even them under his subordination. It appears that even in the higher planetary systems, to which people are promoted by pious activities, disturbances are created by asuras like Hiranyakashipu. No one in the three worlds can live in peace and prosperity without disturbance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So once upon a time, Arjuna was dispatched by his brother Yudhishthir to pick up some heavy artillery for the impending battle against the Kaurava dynasty, because they knew they had such powerful warriors on their side like Bhishma, Dev, and Karna, that they were going to need some extra help in order to win the fight. And so they knew, you're going to have to get some celestial weapons, not just the sort of swords and arrows that we're familiar with here, but the weapons of the demigods. And so Yudhishthira sent Arjuna, basically, to Indra's own abode, which is a pretty incredible story. He gets into a lot of adventures along the way. But we hear from the Mahabharata in that activity of Arjuna going to the heavenly planets, particularly to Indra's own realm, about some of the opulences, some of the pleasures available in the higher planetary systems. And it's pretty amazing. It's described that Arjuna, as he was entering into Indra's own realm or his planet or whatever it is, that he saw the sort of opulences that you'd probably expect, all sorts of, as being described here, the Vaidurya stones and the gems and the beautiful women and the music and all of that sort of stuff, the pomp and the gaiety and the riches. But it's also described that part of the opulences of Indraloka were the great renunciates, that there were so many great sages there performing austerities and meditation, and by their own effulgence they were illuminating the planet. So that's one of the opulences, according to Vedic culture. Of course, nowadays, people don't find that very valuable. Maybe some other time I could tell the story about my attempts to get citizenship in New Zealand on the grounds of being a brahmachari. They don't really think that's a blessing for their country or an opulence to have renunciates around, suffice to say. Anyway, that's one of the opulences of the heavenly planets, or any place, is that there's actual renunciates. Powerful sages. And yet still, in all of these places, there is disturbance. There's no peace and prosperity without disturbance, Prabhupada says. And a story which illustrates this, classic tale, of woe is that Arjuna, while he was there in Indraloka, he was staying for some time, and Indra is actually his father, long story short. He was staying there for some time, and his father really wanted to, you know, bestow all sorts of pleasures upon him because he's such a powerful and incredible person that in his self-same human body, he went to the heavenly planets, which is very rare. So naturally, all of the women there were attracted to him as well for being, an exemplary character. Once upon a time, while he's sitting there in this in Indra's own sort of court, you could say, there's all sorts of women dancing and music playing and festivities. And Indra noticed that Arjuna was looking at Urvashi, who is, very beautiful. I don't really know the details, nor can I meditate upon it, but apparently she's so attractive and so beautiful, even great sages are bewildered by her appearance and all that sort of stuff. And Indra noticed that Arjuna was looking at Urvashi. And so Indra thought to himself, yes, I will indulge my son in the pleasures of the heavenly planets. And so he called Urvashi and said, yes, you go to my son Arjuna. You enlighten him in the way that we do things around here. I think you can all guess the rest. And sent her along to go see Indra in the dead of night. To see Arjuna in the dead of night. So Arjuna is sitting in some sort of room somewhere in a palace, and Urvashi is coming, and she's, you know, decorated from head to toe, slightly intoxicated, perfumed, creeping through the night to go and see Arjuna. And she finds Arjuna and says, oh hero, I noticed that you were looking at me. And I must admit that indeed I am also attracted to you. For what sort of man in his self-same human body could attain Indraloka? We've already heard stories. Your reputation precedes you. We've already heard stories of your valor, of your might. And I must admit that I'm smitten. Now, I've been instructed by your own father, Indra, who is our Lord and Master here, to teach you the ways of sensual pleasure in the heavenly planets. Now we will enjoy. And so how did Arjuna react to this proposition? With his head down, very respectfully, he said, oh, mother, Mataji. I doubt he said it in Bengali, but he said, oh, mother, actually I was looking at you because I was stunned out of respect that you were actually the great, 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 so many greats, great, great grandmother of our own dynasty, the Pandavas. Going back so many, so many generations. Arjuna is very smart. He actually knows his whole family tree, being a great Kshatriya. He says, you're actually, our sire, so to speak. And I recognize that. And so out of respect, I offer you my obeisances. Because, you know, the time, the lifespans is different in the heavenly planets. And it used to be quite frequent that sometimes these ladies would come down and procreate and create all sorts of dynasties in that way. And so that's how he said, please accept my humble obeisances. And interestingly enough, Urvashi, she said to Arjuna, you know, those sort of rules, those sort of taboos, they don't apply here. In other words, you know, one of the features of the heavenly planets is that when it comes to enjoying the senses, it doesn't matter one's family or one's not. She says, I am at liberty to enjoy with whomever I please. And I do so. And now we're going to enjoy. And yet Arjuna still, you know, because he's such a strict follower of his dharma, he didn't succumb to the influence and continued to offer his respectful obeisances. And then she cursed him to become a eunuch for a whole year. She was very upset by this, because they have lots of Shakti and power over in the heavenly planet. So she cursed him to become a eunuch, which later turned out to be to his favor, for his profit. But it's important to recognize that even in such a situation, like in the heavenly planets, where they have, as Prabhupada would say chastely, they have all facilities for even more sensual enjoyment, there's no peace and prosperity. There's always disturbance. Krishna says, Dhyayato vishayon pumsa sangas teshu bhajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vidhayate. Everyone knows this verse probably. If you meditate on a particular object of the senses, and you develop attachment, and from attachment, anger develops, from anger, goes on and on. He doesn't say that just applies to Los Angeles in 2012, and that if you move to somewhere else, Idaho, or you get a place in Malibu, there's not going to be the same distresses. Everywhere in the material environment, there is disturbance, there is distress. It's hard for us to get that unless we hear about higher and higher standards of pleasure. As Prabhupada is saying, nowadays people are attracted to these higher planetary systems. They perform pious activities to get there because of having heard about it. So it's our responsibility and our duty to hear about the pleasure available in the spiritual world. Otherwise, how will we be attracted? How will we be attracted? Just by wishful thinking or sentiment? No way. So we have to hear about the higher pleasure in the spiritual world. The higher pleasure in the spiritual world is that everyone's thinking at every single moment how to please Krishna. If you want to know what Vrindavan is like, that's how you meditate on it. At every single moment, think, what is the best way to please Krishna? And that's the sort of pleasures they're enjoying. We know the different pleasures of Krishna's abodes in Dwarka and Mathura and Vrindavan, the Aishwarya rasas, the Vishramba rasa, in which they're seeing Krishna, but they're not even perceiving him to be the Supreme Person. They're just so attracted by his form, being a little bit dirty with a peacock feather and a flute, a little bit of prasadam smudged on his shirt. This is how Lord Brahma saw him after he was bewildered. His first prayer to Krishna was, said, "You're so beautiful, you have just a flower in your hair and this little flute. It's like a cheap little flute, you know. And yet still, this is the most attractive form." So we need to know how Krishna is enjoying, how the devotees are enjoying in the spiritual world. But what's even more incredible to recognize is that despite Krishna has his own abode, which is fully centered around pleasing him, Krishna has particular pleasures that he enjoys only in this material realm, which is available to every one of us. That's something really remarkable. Some of you know the devotee named Bhavananda. I think everyone knows, most people know Bhavananda Prabhu. The name Bhava, sometimes misnamed Bhavananda. Bhava means like a mental state, like we say bhakti bhava, devotional state. But then there's Bhavananda. Bhava means becoming and unbecoming, referring to this material world. Bhavarog, Bhavasindhu, the ocean of material existence. So this devotee, Bhavananda Prabhu, apparently when he was initiated by Srila Prabhupada, he recognized the Sanskrit name and asked Prabhupada, you know, what is this Bhavananda, someone who enjoys the material world, you know? Are you hinting at something? And Prabhupada described, no, Bhavananda is actually a name for Krishna, because Krishna enjoys certain activities, certain pastimes, certain rasa, only in this material realm that he can't enjoy in the spiritual world. He does it here, and that's available to his devotees here. In fact, there are even some devotees who only perform these pastimes in the material world. Arjuna, Kunti. I read in a letter, Srila Prabhupada is saying, Arjuna and Kunti, they don't participate in the quote-unquote spiritual realm. Only within Krishna's material activities, they're constantly participating. So what are some of those things that Krishna enjoys exclusively in this material tabernacle? I think some of you know that in the spiritual world, there are no demons. Everyone's a devotee. So in Vrindavan, how can you go around killing demons? Everyone's a devotee. They have these rumors that there might be demons around. So sometimes they talk, "Oh, I heard there's a demon in the other town," or something like that. And I heard, "Oh, you know, but Krishna will protect us." They just have the sort of feeling, the bhava. And in the spiritual world, well, let's not get into too many details. The important point that I'm getting at is that in the spiritual realm, Krishna cannot preach about himself. Because everyone's a devotee. Where is the facility, the opportunity to experience the emotions of spiritual reunion? This is why Krishna is called Bhavananda. This is Srila Prabhupada's answer to Bhavananda Prabhu. And Krishna is called Bhavananda because he enjoys preaching about himself. He enjoys the ecstasy of reunion, reclaiming his own conditioned souls back to him. That's a really powerful experience. And we call it Sankirtan. And it's important to note that it's become our inheritance because of being the followers of Sri Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially. It's become our inheritance to enjoy something that Krishna can't even do in the spiritual realm. How valuable is that? Isn't that something we should look into? Bhavananda, the bliss of spiritual reunion. Everyone knows how intense it is to have a reunion with someone, the sort of emotions involved. Maybe some people have had those sort of experiences. You know, and there's all these incredible expectations and because people are so happy to be with each other again, all sorts of misgivings and misunderstandings, you know, immediately fall away and it becomes like a whole new chapter in the relationship. Even in the material sense, reunion is very powerful. So Krishna enjoys that. You know, it's not just that we're, you know, it's like some sort of cultural conquest that we're going out for business, trying to sell as many books as possible or something like the Inquisition. It's actually Krishna's pleasure. He gets a real kick out of it. Bhavananda means he enjoys reclaiming his own conditioned souls. This is the Sankirtan rasa that we're trying to get a taste of, that we should be appreciative to have the opportunity for. Because that's a life of real peace and prosperity, always thinking of how to please Krishna. So Sankirtan makes it very easy, you know. It's such an emotional experience. We're all looking for some sort of emotional kick because we're persons, essentially. That's our theology. We are essentially individual persons with real emotions. We're always looking for some emotional kick. And so we can utilize that propensity in the act of Sankirtan, bringing someone to Krishna. You can invest all of your heart into someone, free from anxiety for Krishna. Because even if it's anxiety, it's a type of spiritual pleasure. It's almost inconceivable for us until we really practice it. But even in the anxiety of bringing someone to Krishna, it's a type of spiritual pleasure. As we hear from Krishna book, you know, Mother Yashoda and the gopis, and how they're practically always in anxiety, but it's actually the highest pleasure. This is the potential that's available in the act of distributing Krishna consciousness, inspiring someone to come to Krishna consciousness. That you can really invest your heart, you know, really put your hopes into someone. We're always putting our hope into someone for our sense gratification. And it's such a stressful condition. Are you going to reciprocate? Are you going to give me what I deserve? But if we do that for Krishna, it's actually the most pleasing for Krishna and for yourself. It's very intense, you know, very intense. To bring someone to Krishna's service, to see their excitement, to see their ups and their downs, and to guide them and to hold their hand. It's really intense. But that intensity will protect us from attraction to investing those same emotions into mundane, temporary illusions. So intense. And by that activity, by that endeavor to invest your heart into someone else for Krishna, you actually get the deepest realization of the ecstasy of devotional service. So everybody profits from it. Like one of my first teachers of Krishna consciousness, my senior godbrother Mahavan Prabhu, would often tell me, he said, you know, you go around preaching about Krishna to others, and at some point it's going to sound so good to you, you'll want to do it also. This is what he told me. So you go around saying, you're not the body, Krishna's servant, you know, pure love of God. And you keep telling so many people, and after a while you think, wow, that sounds so cool, I should try it, you know. I got to try some of that. This is Bhavananda. It's actually an ecstasy. It's a type of pleasure. It's only available in this material tabernacle. And so, you know, if we allow ourselves the opportunity to be affected by those emotions, Sankirtan can become very powerful and effective, and not just some sort of ritual, not just something like we got to do because everybody's talking about it. You know, I'm a little bit, you know, like, have you done some? Yeah, I did a little something. Did you do some? And it can actually be like an anxiety for some devotees. We should recognize from the stories of these great personalities and from the examples of those who are investing their heart that it's actually a great fortune to have that opportunity to put your heart into someone for Krishna. And then Krishna will reveal exactly how fulfilling it can be. If you have a little bit of faith in that way. I've had so many experiences where, you know, to me, the books, I become very familiar and you know, I get kind of complacent and even a little bit bored in devotional service, and I might just be going through the motions. But when you reach out to someone and try to give them the chance, and it touches their heart, and they reveal that to you, and it touches yours too, you know? It means something to them. Like I was on the street once in Auckland City. I think I've told this story before because it's something I meditate on so much. I was in Auckland City in New Zealand. And I was standing on the street. I was talking to someone and some fellow was waiting to the side. And I was thinking, uh-oh, you know. Here we go again, you know, one of those days. But when I finished, this fellow walks up to me and says, hey, are you a Hare Krishna? I said, yeah, mate. What's happening? And then he said to me, I really need someone to talk to. He was like a sober guy. He wasn't a crazy person. So I really need someone to talk to. And somehow, you know, I just like allowed myself to, you know, I just felt just for a slight second, Krishna, let me just be a servant of this person and not just exploit them or think of some sort of profit from this person. Let me really give rather than trying to get. So just for a second, I had that thought. And then Krishna gave me the realization, actually just told me that someone in this person's family had just died. He didn't even tell me yet. But it just came to me. He said, oh, has someone in your family died? And he said, yes. He said, somehow I knew talking to one of you Hare Krishnas was going to do it for me. And so I was talking to him for some time, and it turns out it was his own mother. He was on vacation in New Zealand from England, as so many of them do. And he got news that his own mother passed away back in London or something. And as any seasoned book distributor can tell you, it's quite common that grown men on the street, if you give them a chance, they'll start crying, talking about their own lives. They will open up, they will cry to you. And this man did just that. He started crying, talking about how his mother passed away. And he has no idea what to do. And again, it suddenly occurred to me, you know, Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita, this is not just my business. This is the real deal. I opened up Bhagavad Gita. I showed him the little picture, the changing bodies. I mean, how many times have we all gone through that? And it's like so boring to me. I'm going to make a little confession. It's so boring. Dehina smenyata dehe. I've heard it so many times. Can you imagine giving a class, Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada, we're not the body. I mean, even I would fall asleep. And yet this person, you know, it meant something to him. I showed him the picture. I told him, you know, mate, I got to tell you something honestly. We're not these bodies. We're just passing through, you know. It's just a temporary thing. And you're actually the spirit soul. Your mother's actually spirit soul. She's moved on to another destination. That's not the end, you know. There's a whole science behind this. You should really look into it. And like for a second, I felt it because he felt it. It's the only reason I felt it. He really felt it. And he was just saying, you know, thank you so much. This means so much to me. And of course he, without even asking, unprovoked, he pulled out some money, purchased the book. And he was just so thankful walking away with it. He said, I'm going to read this on the plane. He had to change his flights, of course, to go back as soon as possible. He said, I'm going to read this on the plane. Thank you, thank you. So it's bhavananda, you know. It's actually a really compelling emotional experience for Krishna's pleasure, which he has as our inheritance. We should take it from Krishna how to enjoy. That's the whole point, I guess, I'm trying to make here. They were reading in Srimad Bhagavatam about how persons are trying to enjoy, they fail in this material realm. Let's take it from Krishna, how to enjoy. Arjuna knew this, so he said in the Bhagavad Gita, hey Govinda, why are you telling me to do this? Hey Govinda, you know how to enjoy your senses. We've all heard. We know what you're doing. So why would you want me to do all this miserable stuff? Sometimes we're thinking like that too. You know, Krishna's always enjoying. We see the pictures on the wall. Right, I've read the books, so why do I have to go through all these austerities, 16 rounds, oh my God, 4 regular principles, oh my God, so early in the morning, can't Krishna get up a little bit later, Hare Krishna. And we might be thinking like, why is Krishna in joy, but I'm the one who has to suffer? No, this is actually very unintelligent. Krishna himself enjoys certain activities in this realm, and he's given us that opportunity to participate in that. That's bhavananda, that's sankirtan. So let's not become misers, right? Srila Prabhupada uses this word all the time. Miser. Everyone knows what miser means. So you have something great, but you're just like too thick-headed to even take advantage of it. So let's not become misers and just like go through the motions and have this sort of grudge against Krishna because he made 4 regular principles. Why not 3, you know? I could do that. 16 rounds, oh my God. I hear in other sampradayas, they don't chant 16. You do as many as you like. Why can't we do that? Now, let's not become misers. Let's recognize Krishna is giving us the opportunity for complete emotional, spiritual fulfillment in the form of sankirtan. That's the highest pleasure. Not the sort of pleasure that's available in the higher planetary systems or even in the spiritual world. But here, in Los Angeles, in New Dwarka Dham, there's the potential for Sankirtan. And so I hope everyone will take advantage of that opportunity. I hope I can take advantage of that opportunity. Today, by the way, we'll be going out in Harinam. I know Ganesh isn't here listening, but I think I'm putting a plug for him anyway. We're going out in Harinam in Venice Beach, which is relevant because soon we're having a very big festival, the Ratha Yatra. And it's massive. And it's life-changing for some people, you know. For us, it might be like a real austerity, a lot of work. We might be thinking it's even a burden. Some might be thinking like that. But we have to recognize for all those thousands and thousands of people who get that opportunity to see that festival, it's life-changing for them. There was one woman I met at the book table last year at Ratha Yatra. Her name was Efeme. I think some of you might remember she came to the Bhakti house for some time. She's from Africa. And she was just like wandering through, you know, wandering through Venice Beach. And obviously there's this whole party going on. And so she comes by, she happens to buy some books. She comes to the Bhakti house, gets into some chanting for so many reasons. She had to go to New Jersey. But, you know, she was affected by it. And then I got some message from her just a while ago saying, oh, I just want to let you know, I've still been reading the books. I'm going to this, what is it, Bhakti Cafe or something in New York. I heard from your Swami, Devamrita Swami. She's talking all about the classes she's going to and chanting so many realms, just like that, you know. So that's a profound experience in her life. You know, we should try to appreciate that. It might be, maybe it doesn't feel like it to us. Maybe it feels like the same thing. Maybe it feels even like burdensome. But if we can, you know, have a little bit of a heart and appreciate that it's such a profound experience for those people, then we'll be convinced to invest our heart into it. You know? So that's what I mean. Let's not be misers. Let's take advantage of that opportunity. So in Harinam today, at Venice Beach, we'll be promoting the Ratha Yatra, giving out so many flyers, chanting and dancing and spreading around Krishna's pure and perfect spiritual reciprocation. Thank you very much. I wonder if there's any questions or comments or challenges on any of these points. Something from our Sankirtaneras, our experts. It's all pretty self-evident. Yes, Naikant Prabhu, if you'd like to save me.
Thank you very much for a very nice class, Prabhu. You mentioned Bhavananda, and when he asked Srila Prabhupada, this name, Bhavananda, Prabhupada said no. And he sat back and he opened his eyes real wide. He said, Bhavananda.
Bhavananda.
That's the way it's pronounced, Bhavananda.
Sometimes we say Bhavananda, which is a different word.
Bhavananda.
Thank you for the correction. I don't mean any offense to Bhavananda Prabhu. Okay, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai, Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.